Welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast, where you'll learn how to structure terms and use various creative financing strategies to create profitable deals for short and long-term wealth. Whether you're a buy and hold investor, wholesaler, or flipper, learning creative financing will help you do more deals and unlock profits that you may not even know existed. On the Creative Financing Podcast, we break down actual deals we and our guests are doing and simplify the methods and terms used to execute these strategies. Now, let's dive in and create some terms.
Hello and welcome to the Creative Financing Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Gallegos, here with
Jeff Rappaport.
And today, guys, this episode is going to be all about contract for deed. And I think we're going to title it Contract for Deed in Detail. So we got a great example of a deal that I bought from you, Jeff. You wholesaled it to me. And it's a contract for deed deal. So let's talk about, first of all, how you found it and kind of what you structured on it. And then I'll talk about what I'm doing with it and what I expect from it. And we can even go in a little more in depth and talk about the documentation behind it as well.
Sure.
So people kind of have an idea of what that looks like.
So I'm going to let you kind of lead this one, Jonathan.
Okay.
So you tell me how much information you want, because we can look at some of the different offers that I made. But ultimately, I hope you want to as well look at the one that we got accepted and that the one that you purchased.
Yeah. So first of all, how did you find this deal?
Direct mail.
Okay.
And with like 6-8 months of follow-up to actually get this guy to sell the property to us.
Okay.
And when I say 6 to 8 months, serious follow-up in the last 60 days for sure. So
yeah,
I don't know, 50 plus phone calls, texts.
Wow.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Wow, that is quite a bit.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. And it wasn't until his tenant stopped paying rent that
no.
That he became motivated,
that,
right?
That's not the case, no.
No?
So he had interest from the very beginning. So what our process is, talk to him on the phone, gather information, make him some offers,
and
right?
And follow up.
And he had interest to begin with, okay? But certain things just kept coming about, like he's an out-of-state landlord. He's owned this property for 30-plus years, I think, and had been renting it. So he really had no idea what the condition of the property is. These tenants have been there for a number of years. And at one point, he said, I'm not willing to sign a contract until we walk through the property, in which case we had to wait until he was coming. And then he didn't come, and things got rescheduled. This just dragged on and on. But seriously, up until the day that we actually went and looked at this property, he told us right before that his tenants wanted to buy the property and that he felt like he had to give them the first opportunity.
Okay.
So when we went there, first of all, I went there with my acquisition manager, and we showed up and there was water pouring off the roof. So it had just snowed. It wasn't snowing. It was nice and sunny. So it was all melting. But it was like a waterfall coming off the roof.
Okay.
The garage, as you know, was hanging, like sideways. And there was a big trailer parked right in the front of the house. And I'm like, this is going to need more work than what we anticipated.
Right.
And we walked in with the seller. We met him outside. We walked in, and there were all these notices of eviction posted inside the house, like in the hallway, on the stairs.
Interesting.
Yeah. And his wife was there, and she's like, "Good." This is what she said to me. Good luck with this one. She walked out.
And good luck with this one.
We walked around, and there was a tenant there, and older guy, kind of out of it. And there was obviously something weird going on because he was living outside in a shed, and that supposedly his son, who was leasing the property, was subletting it to someone else. That was the whole eviction kind of thing.
Okay.
So he shouldn't have been subletting it. And either way, no payments had been made for like 2-3 months. And at one point I said to the seller, is it pretty clear that they're not going to be buying the property? Because these were some of the things we had to overcome with him constantly, that there was always something else going on here.
And holding him back.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting.
You didn't have this whole story of this property, huh?
No, I didn't. And that's one of the benefits of buying from a wholesaler. I guess I don't have to deal with that side of it.
No, but you got to deal with some too. So.
Yes, I have. So you went and looked at the property. So what are some offers you gave him? Give us the first three, including the contract for deed offer that actually he accepted.
Okay, so how about I'll just give you three offers, because they were probably the three that were most interesting to him.
Okay.
So, and two of them are contract for deed.
Okay.
So the first one was $338,000 purchase price, $20,000 down, $1,500 a month principal and interest. It was a low interest rate, like 2.5%, like that simple interest that we've talked about before.
Uh-huh.
And a 3-year term. And the balloon payment at the end would be like $286,724. Okay, so the seller, this is a free and clear property, so the seller would have netted just over $360,000 for 3 years. The problem, this didn't work. So he was renting this property way under market. He was renting it for like $13,000, but the condition kind of... he wasn't going to get much more, and as soon as these tenants are out, he would have had to do some work.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, yeah. It's not rentable as is.
No, it's not.
So, but this property should rent for $2,000, maybe even a little bit more, maybe $21,000. So, I don't know that this offer would have even worked. This was probably made more prior to actually seeing it. But it was something that I was willing to look into, one, because it probably would have worked, but it probably wouldn't have been the route that I would have gone. I probably still would have renovated it to some degree and sold it, and then hoped to try to do some substitution of collateral. So just because free and clear, and would have cashed him out really early, or else would have discounted, you know, the note, something like that.
Right.
Okay. The second offer was, let's talk about cash. So initially, before we saw it, I offered $325,000, because it was made somewhat clear to me that, you know, it was just dated. It just needed some cleanup and some updates. And so I was thinking more like $25,000, $20,000, $30,000 maybe. But as soon as we drove up, we knew it was going to need more. And yeah. He was hesitant. You know, he kept saying, I don't want to meet you over there, and then we renegotiate this whole thing. So, and our response would be, well, we've got to see the property. I mean, you don't even really know what kind of condition it's in. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we're basing this on assumptions, and, you know, we don't want to renegotiate either. But if it's not what we think it is, we'll chat about it. So we offered him $300,000 cash, or initially we offered him $325,000 cash, and that's the offer that he wanted. And then we made a third offer. Actually, we made several more offers, but let's go with this third offer, which is short-term financing. So at that point, it was $335,000 with like $30,000 down, and I think it was $1,000 principal only payment for 7 months.
Uh-huh.
And then a balloon payment.
Right.
So we had our kind of longer term, 3 years. We had our rehab loan where we don't have to get hard money for 7 months and our cash offer.
Right.
The problem was is that when we saw the property, it needed more work than what we all, I think even he anticipated, although he did not like the idea of renegotiating this. And we spent 2 hours at the property that first time, and we still did not come to an agreement.
Wow.
Yeah. So what I learned through that 2 hours was that he had in his mind that he was going to put this property into some kind of trust, and that some group had contacted him and said, for $27,500, we will put this property into this trust, and that you won't have any tax consequence with the sale of this property. And so when I'm listening to this whole thing, I'm like, I would love to just tell him, what are you thinking?
That is a lot of money.
One, I don't know of any trust that you can just move your property into after 30 plus years of owning it and then you don't owe the IRS any money.
Yeah.
And second, why is it costing $27,000 plus to do? But he's the kind of person that I didn't want to get in a confrontation.
Yeah.
So actually my acquisition manager was super smart that one of and we've had him on, Jax Petty, our attorney, does some of our closings, all of our contract for deed closings. He said, hey, you know, I'm friends with an attorney. I'm sure that he'd be okay meeting with you. He'll give his, he would tell you what he thinks about this whole deal and let you know if you could do it any cheaper. And so he agreed to it. And that was great because Jax ended up doing it for about $8,000, I think it was. And now we had that trust
established.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, but we still hadn't gotten a deal. And we just kept going back and forth. And I basically offered him, I had to drop like all our prices by like $25,000. So he did not like $300. And even though he realized that the property needed more work, he ended up taking our short-term financing at $310 and still with that $30,000, but now he was able to keep some of that money because he was saving $21,000 or so for this trust thing. and so that's what we got agreed, the $1,000 principal only payments for 7 months.
Okay. And do you think he took that just because he was netting more money? Is that...
So he was price conscious. He doesn't need that money like right away, other than that, what he thought that down payment was. So that's why he liked this offer, even though it was only $10,000 more than the cash. It allowed him to, what he perceived to do that trust thing.
Uh-huh.
It was enough money up front. Then when the trust changed, that, you know, it was still, you know, enough money to make him feel comfortable. And so he was willing to wait a few more months to get his money to get more.
Okay.
But I don't think he wanted to stay in it where he didn't have, I think he has a plan for this money, just maybe not immediate plan.
Gotcha. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. And why did you choose contract for deed versus doing a wrap or all inclusive?
So first of all, it's free and clear. So the choices would have been contract for deed or trust deed and note.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest on this, the only thing that the reason that I offered contract for deed is that sometimes in Utah, we can do a forfeiture process, which allows the seller to regain control of that property very quickly.
Yeah.
In case of a default. So it's a little easier sell that, look, if everything goes terrible here, you end up with your property back super quick with very little money out of your pocket. And so that's really the only reason. But I could have easily have done trust deed and note. And depending on what market this property was in, would kind of dictate what I would offer. So this was in Idaho, I would probably have done trust deed and note.
Right.
And anywhere that I'm not, where it's not clear that I have an attorney that knows how to do contract for deed, I would have done trust deed and note.
Right, right. And I just wanted to make that distinction there of why you didn't, because contract for deed is an easier sell because of that forfeiture process. And
they stay on title.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to get into that. Yep. We've talked about this extensively. Contract for deed is the same as buying a car. When you go out and buy a car, you get a loan in your name and you get a car, but you don't get the title to that car. The bank that loans you the money gets the title to that car. And when that loan is paid off, then you get that title. They send you the title. Yep. So contract for deed works the exact same way. Except title's not transferred up front. It's the owner does sign over title, and that deed is held in escrow. And there's a contract that's made between the seller and the buyer to transfer that, and the terms on which that will happen. So by doing this, Jeff, you saved me a lot of money in hard money costs. You know, the deal would have been a lot tighter if I had to factor in hard money costs. So, and really, this guy's netting probably the same amount as he was when he was actually getting rent, right? If he was only renting it out for $1,300 after taxes, insurance, sure. And utilities.
But that's not irrelevant in this particular case. But yes, if he was counting on that money, mm-hmm. Yes. But to be honest, when I came up with that, what I want when I'm trying to come up with this type of offer, I want to offer, especially when it's free and clear, it's like my next solution would have been to maybe move up by $5,000 and offer zero payments during if he was totally stuck, like, hey, I need more money.
That $325,000.
I might have moved up $3,000 or $4,000 or something and offered zero payments. But to a rehabber like you in this particular case, I mean, making $1,000 a month payment isn't hurting you. And especially if it's going toward principal, it's like, you know, as long as you have that money on hand, no big deal, right?
Right.
So I just picked this number. It wasn't really based on his income, but you're right. If he was, and if he needed that money, it would be something similar to what he was getting before.
Okay, and I kind of thought that that's why you kind of picked that number.
But no, not in this case. It was just because if you think about $1,000 on a $280,000 principal balance isn't really in line with what he could be getting. So
that's true, but he's also not a savvy landlord, and you know, he doesn't demand market rents, and the property needed a lot of work. So.
So, but in this case, couldn't we have offered him $1,300? I mean, hey, now you're netting even more than what you were.
We could have, yeah.
Principal only. And those are some of the things that you can play with on these types of offers, especially when it's free and clear. That and if that was the issue, I mean, done deal. I'll figure out something that'll work for them if that's the issue. It's like, well, I need more money a month. Like, all right, how much do you need?
Yeah.
So exactly. That part's the easy part.
Right. So you sold the property to me, and you made some money on it. How much did you make?
$16,000.
So you wholesaled it to me and added your fee on top of that. I had to come in and put $46,000 down. And I didn't have to get a hard money loan. And so that savings right there, this is one of the reasons I wanted to talk about the deal. When you're able to structure creative terms like this, you can save a lot of money. And my estimates, if I would have had to go get a loan on this, I would have been paying, you know, 2 points and probably 12% interest. And so I'm saving 20, based on my estimates of 6 months, I'm saving about a little over $26,000.
Well, can we look at how that would break down? So you've got some hard money people that you deal with, you've got a track record with. What would you have had to put any money down?
I probably, I don't know. I would have had to run that by him, but
okay.
you know, based on my relationship, I don't think so.
Okay. So you might have had
100% financing.
So you'd be paying, let's say, $3,200 a month in interest.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be paying, it would be accruing.
Right.
So let's call it, you know, 6 months. Yeah, about $19,000 or so.
$20,000
plus add in your 2 points, so 25,000+ in costs.
Yeah.
So.
And so that's the difference between making a deal and a deal breaker, right?
Yeah.
So if you weren't able to structure creative financing on it, I wouldn't have the property right now, and it would have been a deal breaker for me, and it would have been a harder sell for you.
Correct.
So. And we know that contract for deed doesn't work in every state.
It's different.
Or it's called something different.
Yeah, it's different.
But we want to teach this to you guys out there because it's just another tool in your toolbox. So if someone is very hesitant, you know, to transfer title of a property or to do owner financing, well, a contract for deed is, you know, an easier sell,
no doubt.
And so that's kind of the importance of this, because like you said, Jeff, you could have just done, you know, an all-inclusive trust deed, but
it would have just been trust deed and note in this case.
Yeah, right. I keep saying that. I'm sorry.
No.
There was no underlying debt.
Right.
Yeah.
No debt.
Yeah.
And I switch back and forth. So to be honest, if I was going to rehab this property, I probably would have asked for trust deed and note just because that's what I typically do. But I've also done some where it's contracted deed for me, which I haven't had any issues with. It's not been any problem. Actually, the deal that we've talked about a number of times where we did the substitution of collateral, that was contract for deed for us. So when we bought the property, it was free and clear, and you know, we did contract for deed mostly because I wanted him to feel like you have nothing to worry about. You're protected, actually overprotected in this case.
Yeah, and you guys rehabbed it and you sold it and didn't have any problems. And so I want to talk a little bit about the documents now.
Sure.
Used. So there's a document called the actual contract for deed.
Yep.
And in the contract for deed, it does give the buyer the right to list the property, even though we're not legally on title. It gives us the right to list the property.
You're the owner.
Yes.
I know that people think that it's that you're really not. That people consider a contract for deed more of like a hybrid between ownership and like a rent. Like a lease to own kind of thing.
Right.
But you are actually the owner. You're just not on title.
Yes. And the seller actually signs a quit claim deed, and that's what's held in escrow. And then also there's a bill of sale as well.
Yeah.
So there's an actual bill of sale for the property. So, you know, by equitable rights, you're the legal owner.
Yes.
Of the property.
Do you get to write the taxes off if you were paying any interest? Or use it as depreciation if you were renting the property?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're the owner.
Yep, I'm the equitable owner. So, and again, guys, you don't have to put these documents together yourself. So don't get hung up on that. Like, how am I going to come up with this huge document and bill of sale and quitclaim deed? You need to find a competent attorney in your local area that specializes in this, and that might be the challenge for some of you. But again, contract for deed is just a tool that you should have in your tool belt when using creative financing, because I mean, it certainly allows you to do a lot more deals, right, Jeff?
I would say that 75, maybe even more, percent of all the creative financing that we get accepted is contract for deed. But that's probably because I make that offer more than any other offer. So it would be interesting to see, could I get the same amount accepted, more trust deed and note? And actually, we just did a deal where I made an offer to a seller for contract for deed. And he had been in the title business for 30 years, and he preferred to do it as trust deed and note. Okay. I said, nah, great, I'm going to end up buying this property myself, so I'd much rather have it that way. But he understands that better, and he's clear on how it works, and I'm totally fine with that.
And I would say in every case, it just comes down to what does the seller understand?
Comfortable with.
Yeah, or they're comfortable with. Yeah. So, because it, a confused mind will always say no, right? So if they don't get, a trust deed and note or a mortgage, if they don't understand that side of it, then that's going to be a harder sell than, a contract for deed. I wanted to go over this deal and just dive into contract for deed in detail because I think it will allow you to do more deals, especially if you find owners that are more hesitant to transfer title or they're reluctant.
Due on sale clause.
Yeah, or the due on sale clause, and we actually didn't touch on that, but
mostly because there was no loan on this property.
Yeah, yeah.
Any time that you are dealing with an underlying loan, it's got a due on sale clause, and some sellers are totally reluctant to do creative financing where there's a possibility, even though that possibility is super slim, that the loan could be called due and they might be put in a position that they don't want to be put in. And contract for deed or a land contract or agreement for sale or whatever it may be in your area can basically eliminate that entire issue.
Yeah, because there's no formal title change
on the
record. Yep. So great. Well, any last words on that one, Jeff?
No, I hope that you're going to have to report back and tell us how this all kind of.
So yeah, just to offer a little context on what I came into when I showed up to the property after I closed on it. I showed up to the property and I talked to the guy that you met, the older guy that was living there. He was still living in the house, and when
out of the shed or in the house?
No, he was in the house.
Okay.
I never looked in the shed though. I didn't know. I don't know if there's a bed in there.
Some heating in there, and then he was actually living in that shed.
So when I showed up, I called him. I got his phone number and I called him prior to showing up and said, hey, do you mind if we come and walk the property? I want to meet my contractor there. And he's like, yeah, sure, no problem. And as soon as we show up, we're out, by our vehicles talking, and he walks out of the house and first thing he says is, I'm going to sue you because you haven't given us adequate notice. So that's kind of what I walked into.
Adequate notice for not paying, by the way.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I walked into. So we weren't able to actually go look at the property or go look inside the property because he said he didn't want us on the premise. So I was at that point, I was like, oh, I'm going to have to do an illegal eviction on this guy. But I was able to talk to his son, and his son is super cooperative, and he was the actual tenant on the lease, and he was able to get his dad out of there. So now we're into the property, and we'll have to do a follow-up on that to see how it
now,
turns
I really
out in
hope
the end.
That you make a lot of money, but not too much, because then I'm wondering if I sold it to you too cheap.
Well, I'm going to tell you exactly what I made on
all
it.
Right.
And,
but make sure you make some money, because I don't want our relationship to be strained anyway.
Nope.
Okay.
That's the risk I take as a flipper, right?
Yes.
So I'm excited for the deal. And when I first walked through it with my project manager, he was thinking like 25 to 30.
Good.
So he was thinking less. When I first seen it, I was thinking 40,000.
And I told you 50.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we're going to do some siding on it. That's going to be a bigger expense. And then there's just so much stuff in the backyard that we got to figure out. So, but all in all, I mean, and then the roof, we're going to throw a layer of shingles over the roof because there's only single layer right now.
Yep.
So we're going to do a layover, and then
you got some cosmetics stuff.
Yeah, there's
sure.
There's some cosmetics inside, but it's not too bad actually.
You could keep most of that flooring, I think.
Yeah, we're debating that right now, whether we're going to cover it or keep it. Because when we sell it, we're shooting for that 450, and so we want it to look high end.
Yep.
We want it to have that higher end feel for
yep.
sure.
Yep.
So, but you know, there's a central air conditioner already that doesn't look too old. A newer water heater. The windows are newer, double pane vinyl, so that's not a big expense. So some of the bigger items are. Were there already, so that,
yep.
that was a good
roof landscaping.
That was
if
a good
you're
find.
Do siding, and then it's cosmetics.
Yep,
got to get that garage back on track.
Yep, yeah, we're gonna put the garage
like the
door
look,
back
yeah.
on track. Yeah, cool. All right, guys. I hope you've enjoyed this. I hope you have a better understanding of contract for deed and how it works, and some of the documents involved, and hopefully, you guys can. Put it in your tool belt. If you guys have any questions or comments you want to leave for us, if you want to work with Jeff in his apprenticeship program, or if you are someone that's looking at commercial deals nationwide, and you would love to figure out how to make some creative financing offers, Jeff would love to chat with you on that. You can reach us at 877-409-8090, 877-409-8090. You can also reach us on the web, www.thecreativefinancingpodcast.com, and we have a Facebook page, The Creative Financing Podcast. So check us out on Facebook, like our page. We appreciate it. Any last words, Jeff?
No, I'm looking forward to... getting more feedback from our listeners, questions, that topics they want to talk to, deals they want to work through. I love the interaction with our audience.
For sure. Until next time, guys, create some terms.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Financing Podcast. We need your feedback to continue to bring you the best strategies in creative financing. So please subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. We greatly appreciate your ear, and please pass this on. Until next time, create some terms. This show offers general information on creative financing strategies and real estate investments. Nothing contained herein should be considered personal, legal, or financial advice. Every state has individual laws governing the use and type of documents used to execute strategies discussed herein. You should consult with a local licensed real estate broker and attorney before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, and opinions of the guests are their own. Profits are not guaranteed, and there's always inherent risk in real estate investing.